I'm Josefina Bonsundin-Vumba. Welcome to Retential Conversations, the podcast. I truly believe in the untapped potential existing in Africa and within African communities inside and outside of Africa, whose talent, hard work, and innovations can help and are helping transform our societies. I also believe in the value of stories and that by sharing, we can identify common lessons, challenges, and opportunities for growth. This podcast is for those interested in African narratives and topics that touch African communities, with the hope of creating a safe platform for open conversation, learning, and inspiration. I hope you're as excited as me and that you enjoy listening. Welcome again to another Retential Conversations podcast. This episode features Muna Love, who I met last night here in London at the African Diaspora Awards. It was such a great night, and Retential had the honor to nominate Muna for one of the awards. And we also took the opportunity to then speak with Muna to hear about her vision for the creative consulting firm, AIA Consulting. And in particular, I thought one of the really interesting things that she spoke about was about the importance of making African stories relatable to non-Africans. Here it goes. So, hi Muna, it's lovely to speak to you today.
Hi Josephine.
It was lovely to see you yesterday. How do you feel about the award?
It was brilliant. You know, it's funny because when you contacted me, I was, at first I just thought I was nominated. And so I didn't necessarily think that my presence would be required. So I was like, okay, this is lovely, this is nice, and this is definitely something that I would support. But, and then I received the actual invitation. And I was like, oh wow, I'm actually getting an award.
It's happening.
It's happening. So no, I have to be there. And I think part of it wasn't I have to be there because of ego or just because I felt flattered and because I knew it would be a lovely evening and we would wine and dine and talk and meet and network. But I think I also had to be there because it was a way for AIA Consulting to be represented mm-hmm. and to be part of the conversation. Because that's always been very much what I, you know, have dreamt about when it came to AIA. It really isn't about me as an individual. And I'm not saying that out of sheer modesty, but just I really feel that it's about the work and it's about the people that we actually promote. So we're really behind the scenes. But AIA Consulting is also a concept, right? And so that has to be represented. And if I can voice or I can kind of share what I believe AIA is and can be and continues to be, then that must happen, right? So I think for me it was great to be present and then just again to meet like-minded people, to see that things are happening globally. Mm-hmm. You know, that a lot of African women specifically, because that's also something that is very dear to me, you know, how much we as women are also very much proactive and, you know, we're moving mountains and we're trying things. And sometimes we succeed and sometimes we don't, but we're very much part of the conversation now. And so that was for me very cool, just to be surrounded by, I think, a vast majority of established women, women with experience, but who are still very much relatable and accessible. Mm-hmm. And I think again that for me it's not so much the accolade, it's not so much that yeah you're doing great work. It's more like let's keep working. Like this is just a stepping stone, right?
Yeah.
We recognize that you are on a path. But what's important is the path.
The journey,
where it's going to lead.
And that's interesting because I think in the event they also mentioned they gave this image of the lion and the impala, right? And then the lion eats or attacks the impala, and because the lion wins, he kind of gets all the praise, but the people forget about the journey. And normally when we give awards or we praise people because of what they got, we forgot about everyone else that also maybe even came from further behind and they achieved more, but because we're only focusing on that goal and the outcome, we're not recognizing that effort. And effort is effort, right? Regardless. So that's a very interesting perspective that you are offering there. And because obviously you've talked about AYA and you got your award, because that's a bit more about what you're doing with AYA very briefly, so people listening actually know also what you do.
IAZ is a creative consulting firm. What that means is that we work with creative professionals, artists, art and culture practitioners, institutions, startups, companies, individuals as well, who want to be supported in terms of communication, marketing, branding, press relations. We also do a lot of portfolio, what I call portfolio overs. The idea is really to promote, conceptualize or support projects that are directly connected to the artistic and cultural world in the Caribbean, on the African continent, in the diaspora. In a very tangible way. So what I often say when I talk about AYA is that we have three requirements. The first one is that the project has to be directly connected to these geographic, but most importantly, cultural spaces. Africa, the Caribbean islands, and of course the diaspora. And sometimes projects can really involve all three. The second requirement for AYA is that there has to be a level of, I would say, transmission. So it's very much about the projects that we support or the campaigns that we launch or the events that we organize are very much about kind of building a legacy. So there has to be an educational component to them. But not in a didactic way or in an academic way necessarily. It can, but not necessarily. But we wanted to kind of live outside the project. And then the third requirement is that we have a tendency to support.
Let's want to say, because it's quite loud with the third. Let's wait until there. Such shame if you can't hear it properly.
Yeah. That covered you, you know.
Well, we did stop because it was a bit noisy. I think I got you up to the point two. Maybe if you want to go back to number two,
yes,
just in case, and then just develop number three, that'd
sure.
be great.
No
great.
Problem. So two is the educational component. So every single project that we create or that we support has to have like an educational dimension, and not necessarily academically, but more in terms of we want people to retain something out of it, and we want the project to live beyond the time that it's going to be there, so that, you know, people can remember it and people can learn from it and people can tap into it perhaps to create something else.
When you refer to the educational component, mm-hmm. who is your public? Because if you're already kind of engaging artists, mm-hmm. normally these tend to be people already interested in those topics.
Correct.
How do you go beyond that, or how are you envisioning reaching out to other people so you can actually educate them about, you know, the arts and culture?
Yeah, well, actually, because our work is to really support creatives and artists, and to perhaps give them a greater voice or a more global voice, the educational component really relies on what they actually produce, so that the general public, not just people who either already love the artist or the specific field that they're in or that they already know about it, but everyone can feel connected to it in some way.
Okay.
So it really is, if I can give you an example, like a more perhaps tangible example is, we did this multidisciplinary art workshop with an international artist, and the outcome, or one of the outcomes of that particular workshop, was for an exhibition to be created. And so that would be, of course, the whole workshop was very much training, you know, art students, etc. So there's definitely an educational component there. But also with the exhibition, we were able to have people from every walks of life discover or rediscover, you know, something that was there, that was created for them to also understand.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, be it visual arts or dance, people will tell you, well, I don't necessarily know the codes. I don't necessarily know how to decipher that. And so part of our, I guess, desire is for people to start getting those codes, for people to start appreciating it, and also for artists to be able to convey a message that people can understand.
Okay.
So not simplifying it, because that's not necessarily the point, but just making it more accessible.
Okay.
And allowing artists or creatives to share what their process is, how they create art, how they produce art, why it is important to them, what they are trying to achieve with it, right? And so I think that also makes it a lot more digestible to you or me or to any...
To the general, to the wider public.
Exactly. Yes. And I do believe that that's important. You know, I think that oftentimes people think that art is not designed for the many. You know, it's you know, especially again when it comes to the visual arts, to contemporary art, or to dance, or even to photography, people are like, well, you know, this is not necessarily what I feel drawn to. But it's because oftentimes they don't know a lot about it, and they don't know about who makes it.
Yeah.
I don't think artists are any different from anyone. It's just a matter of knowing what the language is. Mm. And yeah.
So, and also because I interrupted you earlier, you were talking about your second point and you were moving on to your third point. What was that third point that you wanted to speak about earlier?
Well, the third point for me has to do with gender, and I think this is why I was talking about how, you know, happily surprised and just appreciative of the evening yesterday, because there were a lot of women. A lot of the support or projects that are led by women, or that involved women, or that promote womanhood or femininity. And that's another very important focus for me, because when it comes to creativity, as in many other fields, women are oftentimes underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of how we want to sort of challenge that is by really focusing on women creatives. And so an example of that is, for instance, the masterclass series that we had last year, all our hosts were professional women creatives, women who have been in the business, who have been working, who are known by some and totally unknown by others, but who are doing the work. And I think kind of highlighting that, just putting the spotlight on them, is also very much a part of our mission. Aya, which comes from the Adinkra, I call it the Adinkra visual language, because Adinkra is not just signs and pictures, it's also mottos and proverbs. So it's definitely almost like an alphabet, right? And Aya means resilience and resistance, but it's associated with feminine powers. And so calling the consulting firm Aya was also a direct reference to that kind of female essence, and that's very important for me. So that doesn't mean we don't work with men, we do, but it's we try to highlight women perhaps more than what we have seen thus far, what we tend to see in the creative world.
So moving on a bit from, so you kind of provide a perspective from Aya, what you do with your work. If we open it up a bit to the African arts and culture, because obviously potentially it's all about that African culture, arts, communities, conversations, etc. In your view, what can the world learn from African arts and culture, if anything?
Well, I think the world has already learned a lot, because I think African arts and culture have already been
very much at the center of what we see. I mean, in many artistic fields, the African imprint is tangible, you know, it's palpable, it's there. I think it's recognizing that that might take more time than we would want, because obviously it's been obscured. And there's also a lot of misrepresentation and a lot of misunderstanding about what it is. You know, for instance, in France, a lot of times when you talk about African art, when it's non-contemporary, it refers to primitive art, right? And that already in itself is not only offensive, but it's also completely untrue. Unless we use the term primitive as the first, right, as the sort of premier, you know, form of art. But if not, if we're just saying it that it's basic, you know, that primitive, and therefore African art is raw, is simple, is basic, then that's already, you know, obviously a misnomer, and it's very limiting. So I do believe that we have to also redefine how we, if not redefine, but change the way we talk about African arts and culture. And not just the way the Western world has talked about African arts and culture, but also how we talk about it as Africans or Afro-descendants. You know, what are our references? Who do we know? Who do we hold as founders and pioneers and leaders and who we, and again, there's an interesting take again on the role that women have played in the art, in the artistic and cultural world, in Africa especially, but also again in the diaspora, on the Caribbean, in the Caribbeans as well. So I think as always, when it comes to Africa, I think renaming, redefining, changing our views and our conception, and also reclaiming, I think, reappropriating what has been ours but has not necessarily been designed or has been perceived as ours is important. And then I would say that, again, the continent is so diverse, it is so nuanced, it is so complex, and it is, as anywhere, constantly evolving, that we also have to keep in mind that what we may be talking about today may not be what we're, you know, talk about tomorrow. That art, many artistic forms on the continent accompany how people live. And are associated with how people live, right? And so if people live differently, then those artistic forms are going to evolve as well, right? They're not going to be the same. In other words, you know, if statue making was a thing in the 13th or 14th century, not to say that it's not a thing today, but if this was definitely something that a lot of artists kind of wanted to focus on, it may not necessarily be the case today, because that's not necessarily what we want to uphold or what we want to or what we want to show or what we want to create a sort of world around. So I think again, our understanding of what Africa has brought and can bring and will bring to the world has to be closely associated with how African cultures have evolved over time and what they're like today, what they're about today.
So does that imply to a certain extent that there's no such thing as what African art and culture provide to the rest of the world, because there's diversity within what that means and what that is, and also because it evolves?
Exactly.
Is that kind of, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense, yes.
Absolutely. And I think it's how we phrase the question. Not to say that this is not a valid question, but I think it's how we phrase it. Because first of all, by saying what can we provide or what have we provided, it's almost as if we're questioning whether we have provided something or not. And I think that's not even a question in itself,
yes.
You know, obviously. Africa is such a fertile terrain for arts and culture to evolve, to spring, to blossom, to prosper. It's that is, for me, that's not really the question. I think I think perhaps one of the questions I have is, how can people who are not African or who are not driven to African realities feel connected to it? And I think that goes back to what we've been talking, and you and I have been talking about this quite a bit, but it comes back to stories.
Okay.
And whether people can feel connected to our stories. If you take someone like Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and I'm only really using her example because I believe she is a brilliant storyteller, she often says that when she was a young girl and she was reading books, she loved the stories that she was reading, but she couldn't really recognize herself in the stories, right? And I do think, and a lot of people have said that, not just her, but I'm just using her example to show that, of course, we want to be able to discover people who are not like us and ways cultures and lifestyles that are not ours. But we also want to be able to see ourselves, right? But I also think that in our case, even today, people who are not, again, either Black or African or driven to the African world for whatever reason do not feel that connection for reasons that we can explain and that are understandable. But I think that, for me, is what needs to change. That is the shift that needs to happen for people who are non-African to start looking at those stories, at those productions, and say, hey, wow, this speaks to me. This is me. This is me. I could be, Muna. I could be Josephina. If Josephina were to write a book, I can see myself in her story. And of course, we're not identical, and we're not supposed to be.
But no one is. Anyway.
But no one is. Exactly. No one is. And what we want is, we just want it to resonate with people. And I think that's the question for the next century or so. How can other people relate to our stories?
So I will ask you that question. How do you think people can relate? Because we see a bit of a shift already, no?
Mm-hmm.
The stories of anyone, our stories, were always there. They mm-hmm. never... No, they always have been there, right?
Correct.
The stories of every single human being. Why is it now that it seems like people like Chimamanda are good storytellers and people are starting to feel more connected to that story? What is the change? What have caused that change? How come all of a sudden people seem to be much more attractive mm-hmm. to authors like her, to music, Afrobeats, to what is to be African, to our hairstyles, what's going on?
I think it's because we've become unapologetic about it.
Okay.
I think that, again, as always, and with any of those really profound questions, there are so many factors that can be explored, and I don't want to, again, simplify something that's much more complex, but I do believe that it starts with our posture.
Okay.
How we present ourselves.
And that's an interesting point, because that, again, puts the responsibility back to us, right?
Absolutely.
Because
we
always think it's the environment that is changing. We now have more opportunities, but no, because again, that's taking a position of victimhood in
absolutely,
a way, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When you look at Chimamanda, and I think that's also one of the reasons I used her as an example, and again, there are many, many examples, and Chimamanda is one amongst many, but I do like her example, because when you listen to her, I've listened to many interviews, and every time I really look at her facial expression, her demeanor, even what she wears, and of course what she says, and there is no sentiment, no shame, there is no unease, there is no, she very simply and directly and bluntly speaks from her perspective as a Nigerian Igbo African woman, and her stories are rooted in that. And there is no She does not try to apologize for that. You have to, you if you are interested in what she's saying, you then have to adjust to what she is saying. She will not adjust to you.
Exactly.
And I think that's the positioning, that's the posture that we need to have. I often tell people, because I've had that as well with regards to Aya, I've had people telling me, oh, but is it only for black people? Or why are you so, you're so pro-black? And I often laugh when I hear that because I'm like, but you would absolutely, you would never, ever say to somebody who has a creative consulting firm and whose clients are mostly white people, but you're so pro-white,
exactly.
You know.
And you almost have to explain yourself for that, right?
Exactly. And what I often say, because I no longer want to explain myself, is, but I'm black. Mm. I am black. So, yes, I find it quite...
I might copy that one. someone question. But I am black.
Exactly.
Why are you surprised?
Exactly. Like, and I don't want to legitimize. I don't want to have to legitimize why I do what I do. And however, when people ask me, because I've also had the follow-up question, which is, as a white creative, can I, you know, attend one of your master classes? Can I propose a project to your firm that you would be interested in? And my answer to that is twofold. As far as our creative master classes are concerned, they are open to professional creatives, right? And irrespective of color and gender. However, the focus is very much to create spaces that are specifically designed for creative professionals of color, because I don't believe that there are many opportunities for them to meet in that manner. And so I do want to encourage that.
And you also want to protect those spaces, right?
Absolutely. They have to be safe spaces.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's very much at the core. So I wouldn't say no to someone who is genuinely interested and who is going to contribute in a meaningful way to the conversation if the person is white. But I am very clear when I'm promoting the masterclass that I'm targeting a specific type of audience, right?
Yes.
Some people thought that it was very niche and whatever, but it. At some point or another, you do have to make choices, right? And you have to be very specific. So that's for that. And as far as working with companies or startups or individuals who are non-black, if their project has at its very core the desire to be inclusive, both in terms of gender and in terms of race, then I can totally work with them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't contradict my values at all, but it means that they are on the path of ensuring that how they promote their business and how they communicate around their business and what their business is essentially about has us, you know, featured as well. And it's not an afterthought. It's not like, oh yeah, I need to add, you know, one black person to my new marketing campaign. No, it's that when we think about our potential clients, when we create ads, when we brand ourselves, we have this sort of spectrum in mind, and that includes people of African descent. They are very much a part of our ethos, very much a part of our discourse. So if that is the case, then yes, I'll work with you.
Yeah.
But if it's not, then no.
It doesn't align with your mission and vision. So you are soon to relocate to Dakar, Senegal. You are currently based in France, even though you do projects all over. Can you tell us or tell me a bit about why you're thinking of relocating and what is the importance of relocating back to the continent?
Correct. Well, you have to go full circle, and I think you said something that's very important, is you have to be coherent. If I am building something for creatives of color, be it in the continent, you know, in the Caribbean or in the Western world, for the diaspora or the diasporic communities, then that means that at some point or another, the firm also has to be located in one of those spaces, right? Mm-hmm. And so AYA was founded in the Caribbean, then I traveled back to Africa and then to Europe. So now it's only legitimate that AYA also finds a home in Africa. And particularly today, I think there was, for me as an individual, there was also a level of maturity that I felt I hadn't acquired with regards to AYA. And having resided and worked on the continent as well, I just felt that I also needed to mature my vision for AYA. It needed to grow. I needed to be more assertive about what I wanted to do and where I wanted to take it. And I think that, not to say that the continent is you know, the highest on my list, and therefore, you know, AYA has to be at its best. But because, again, all of those geographic spaces are important. But I just felt that I also needed to honor AYA in a way that would propel it on the continent, and that would be, it needed to be sturdier, it needed to be stronger.
So from that AYA experience, if you had a message to share with other diaspora communities, mm-hmm. right, that are doing businesses outside of Africa, mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would tell them with regards to, you know, relocating, going mm-hmm. back? Is there something that we need to be doing also inside the continent in order to really amplify or impact our voices?
I think what I often hear is that I often hear people relocating, but not necessarily having had a sort of thorough understanding of where they're relocating and what the continent is all about. I think you have to live there, you have to be there, and you have to understand how it's morphing and how you are going to be interacting with people there before you feel ready to do it. Mm-hmm. At least that's my thinking, and that's how I work. Maybe because I'm a researcher at heart, and so I always feel that you have to do your research before you start anything, right? And that can take, you know, whatever amount of time that you feel is needed, but I think that you have to do your research. I also feel that you have to see what's happening there as well. So our relocation is physical, but there's going to be a very long probation period during which we're going to be observing mm-hmm. and feeling things and meeting people and connecting with people and seeing what is already happening and how we can continue to support or perhaps orient certain things in a different way if people are willing to do that. But it's not necessarily, I'm not going to come with tons of projects already in head. Even though I do have those projects, I still want to observe, I still want to feel, I still want to see. Because I don't think I'm weighted and I don't think I'm necessarily needed. I do feel that what I can propose can be a plus, can add to the conversation. But I don't come as, you need this. You need AYA consulting in your life. So I'm going to save you. No, that's definitely not my mentality. And I think that, you know, as much as people talk about the whole white savior syndrome, we as members of the diaspora as well, we can sometimes also be victims to that, right? We can come to Africa, and with my experience as a member of the diaspora, with my knowledge of Europe or the United States, I can come and teach, you know, my fellow Africans on ways of the world. And I think we have to be very mindful and very careful that it may not work out that way at all, right?
Yeah.
And it's important to also look at ourselves in a very kind of critical way as members of the diaspora. And I say this because it's true. I feel that oftentimes when I see people who've expatriated and who are very excited about, you know, returning to the continent, again, their conception, their views, their ideas of what the continent is have been shaped as well by their experience in the West, right? And so it's not necessarily a bad thing. It is a thing, but I think it's important to be mindful of that in the work that you do. People are not waiting for you to come. Okay. They will gladly welcome you if they feel that you're bringing something that's valuable, but they're not waiting for you, right? So.
Interesting. So my last question, or perhaps not question, I'm not sure how to call it. So I'm gonna start a sentence and I'd like you to complete it. Okay. And that is, the Africa I want is?
The Africa I want is the Africa I know. It's the Africa I want is an Africa where people are, again, unapologetic about who they are, what they've done, but also what they will be doing, where we welcome new ideas, new visions, where we trust that new ideas and new visions and new initiatives are going to move us forward, but not necessarily in comparison or in contrast to other nations or to other countries or to other continents, but for ourselves. How do we want our African continent to evolve within itself, right? Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I think the Africa that I want is just one that continues to shape and reshape and remold itself, and that is content with, you know, the end product, with the masterpiece that it is. And the Africa that I know and therefore that I want is one that is safe and enjoyable and rich. For me, it's the beginning and it's the end. It really is. I want us to trust that who we are and what we have is sufficient. It really is. It really is. And that we can continue to perfect ourselves. We can continue to grow and to develop. But we have to do it in our own terms. It's very important that we do it in our own terms.
Wow, beautiful. I like that, Africa, too. thank you so much, Muna.
Thank you.